welcome this week to Unboxed. It's a show where me and my lovely friend Isabel, who's just currently unzipping her backpack, unbox a movie each week, therefore sort of just discussing it and making a playlist based on our favorite, not our favorite tunes from the movie. Sometimes there's, you know, some stuff from the soundtrack, but it's also just, you know, influenced by the vibe. You know, it's intuitive. Let's go with that. This week we watched The Virgin Suicides by Sofia Coppola, kind of going along with an unintentional running theme of watching directorial debut features. We watched Blood Simple from the Coen brothers. I know we watched another one last semester that was a debut feature. Siama, maybe? I think she actually had one before that. Anyways, I know there's another one, but long story short, this was Sofia Coppola's directorial debut in terms of feature-length film. Funnily enough, I actually think it's probably my, like, favorite of all of her films. I'm not actually, like, the hugest fan of Sofia Coppola, or Coppola. I don't know exactly. I think it's Coppola. By the way, I'll turn on mic 4 for you, Isabel, if you want to jump in at all. But yeah, it's a really, like, consistent in terms of its tone. And I think that's a good quality of any film. But I just, I think that her later oeuvre gets a little muddled for me. Me and Isabel were talking about this. We'll get into it more later on.
This was it's funny because I know two weeks ago, on our last show, I talked about The Northman. Well, we both talked about The Northman, but I specifically talked about seeing it on the plane coming home from Israel. And it's funny because I saw Lost in Translation, which is the only movie that my dad put on his letterbox after I forced him to get a letterbox. And I've been trying ever since to get him to post more. And I know he's going to listen to this. So, Dad, you know, please post more because, anyway, I watched Lost in Translation also on the plane. I think it was actually going there, but similar, like, airplane movie. And I don't know why he, I don't know. Me and Emma, I think, are in agreement that it's not our fave.
I think that the thing is that maybe why I have this sort of, I'm not going to call it a bad taste in my mouth, because I actually do like this movie.
Huh.
But it's that, like, the problem is genuinely that, like, there's not enough women directors.
Yeah.
So maybe, like, I'm harsher on this movie than I should be. And I think most people are harsher than they should be in general on women directors as opposed to male directors, because there's this, like, burden of representation.
But she's a nepotism baby, so.
Yeah, no, for sure. but that doesn't mean that, like,
no.
It's not, like, it's, like, again, like, so we're putting all this pressure, like, for her to, like, she's a nepotism baby, et cetera, et cetera. Do you know how many male directors are probably the exact same thing?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And we don't talk about it as much because, like, there is more of them, so it kind of just, like, blends into the noise.
Yeah.
I try and check myself every once in a while, just because it's, like, I feel like there's this sort of pressure, not pressure, but, like, I feel like I should identify with her films because she's a female director and there's so few of them. And so when I don't, like, I sort of, like, I'm like, oh, this isn't as good as, like, it could be. But at the same time, like, it's still, like, we need people to try to approximate the female gaze or a female sensibility.
Yeah, well, what
you... Otherwise, we'll never get there. We'll never have enough, like, material to draw from to have a canon of, like, a distinctly feminine style of filmmaking. So I do think that it's good to have Sofia Coppola's movies as an example of what it could look like. Because I do think that there are some moments, especially in this movie, and I think it's probably, like, a little bit of naivete that, like, results in something better than she was intending it to be. But there's some really, like, quiet moments that I think are, like, something I've never seen before. Just jumping in with some obligatory comments. This is Unboxed, and you're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. Probably a good time to just sort of go into the first couple songs that we have on the trickety track. And then we'll jump back in, because I do feel like we have a lot to say.
Yes.
So far away, doesn't anybody stay in one place anymore? It would be so fine to see your face at my door. It doesn't help to know you're just time away. Long ago I reached for you and you're so far away. One more song about moving along the highway. Can't say much of anything that's new. If I could only work this life out my way, I'd rather spend it being close to you, but you're so far away. Doesn't anybody stay in one place anymore? It would be so fine to see your face at my door. Doesn't help to know you're so far away. Yeah. Nothing else to do but close my mind. I sure hope the road don't come to own me. There's so many dreams I've yet to find. But you're so far away. Doesn't anybody stay in one place? It would be so fine to see your face at my door. And it doesn't help to know you're so far away. Yeah, you're so far away. Yeah, you're so far away.
Once there was a way.
once there was a way to get back home. Sleep pretty, darling, do not cry, and I will sing a lullaby. Golden slumbers fill your eyes, smiles awake you when you rise. Sleep pretty, darling, do not cry, and I will sing a lullaby. Once there was a way to get back homeward. Once there was a way to get back home. Sleep pretty, darling, do not cry, and I will sing a lullaby.
Sing me to sleep, sing me to sleep. I'm tired and I want to go to bed. Sing me to sleep, sing me to sleep. And then leave me alone. Don't try to wake me. I will be gone. Don't feel bad for me. I want you to know deep in the cell of my heart, I will feel so glad to go. Sing me to sleep, sing me to sleep. I don't want to wake up on my own anymore. Sing to me, sing to me. I don't want to wake up on my own anymore. Don't feel bad for me. Deep in the cell of my heart, I really want to go. There is another world, there is a better world. Thank you.
Hello, hello, hello. So, jumping back in, this is Unboxed, a show where we sort of unpack a different movie each week, and this week we're talking about The Virgin Suicides. I've been sort of reflecting a little bit more in the time that we've been listening to the songs that we've picked out. And I think that one thing that this movie does really well, and that I think Sofia Coppola does pretty well in general, is like it has a very nice color palette. The color grading is super nice, like soft pastels. It has this very like dreamy, like sun-soaked boredom aesthetic that I think really like carries through the like messages that the movie's trying to explore of innocence, like childhood disrupted, and you know, suburbia. I don't know, the thing this movie like definitely like has some like really lovely almost like still life like shots of like just random clutter in the girls' rooms that feel like superhuman and that feel closest to me like the female gaze in this movie, like just when we're like looking at like, I don't know, the Lisbon sisters, like there's a bunch of like stuff on the floor and they're like just doing like arts and crafts and stuff like that. It reminded me so much of like, you know, when you're a kid and it's summer and for some reason like you have this narrative in your head that like falling in love this summer is like the most important thing that could possibly happen to you instead of just enjoying like your youth with your sisters. And I think that that's something that like stuck with me about this movie. Just this liminal space of adolescence and sort of capturing that with a very, like, detached tone. But yeah, I don't know. Do you have anything else? That's not to say that I don't have problems with this movie. We can get into problems later, but I was thinking maybe you could say what you liked about it.
What
first.
I liked about it. I think, yeah, it's hard for me. The reason why I paused, it's hard for me to put a finger on, you know, like, how much I liked or disliked the movie, because it is so, like, tonally so hazy, and I think that feeds into my own ambivalent opinion on it. I did like the haziness of it did accentuate the plot, and I think it made it less like sensationalist, and I think that was like, I kind of put off watching this movie even though I had always been thinking about seeing it, but I was like, I don't know if it'll end up being too depressing. I mean
this movie surprisingly like does a great job of like remaining like distant enough to be respectful but not coming across as a PSA.
Exactly.
Which I think is probably like why it has staying power.
Yeah,
in
and it's
public consciousness.
Yeah, it's not like, well, I know that it's the movie that Emma loves to hate, Midsommar.
But see, to me, like
that was sensationalist.
This does what Midsommar should have done, which is like,
yeah,
like focusing on like American culture and like the complete like stringentness of evangelical Christianity when it comes to like the trauma that these women are experiencing. To me, like, Midsommar didn't connect the dots. Like, it didn't like bring it back to her trauma and like make it like a full continuum where we like understand the connectivity of things. Like, to me, I feel like at least in this movie, like, we understand why one thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think my point of bringing it up was that like the tragedy that occurs in the beginning, which starts this whole, you know, quest to find Dani's quest to find herself, and like try to heal from the trauma of her sister killing her parents and herself, which is literally how the movie starts. It's like, it was more like, this is the catalyst for all these like insane events.
Yeah, like,
and it's like, this is how
suicides,
I'm trying to heal.
Like, that conflict is the movie.
Yeah, exactly.
In Midsommar,
is what I'm
it's
saying.
Like window dressing.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that like that's why I wanted to kind of compare the two, and also to explain why I was saying, yeah, like there's a lack of, even though there is a similar tragedy, there's a lack of sensationalism, and it's not, they also don't really show the parents when they, you know, I mean, they wake up to find all their daughters dead, but it's kind of, they just leave, there's like the narrator said that they gave up any semblance of a normal life, and they just sold the house to a couple from Massachusetts and kind of just vanished off into the ether, versus like, you know, in Midsommar, it's like Dani's, you see all this emotion and it's like an over the top. I mean, it's just weird because it is, yeah, like the window dressing for the film and the impetus for why she's like, I want to go to Sweden. But it's a lot of just very, very big emotions.
But it's like so circumstantial. Like,
yeah.
It's like, there's no like, I don't know, there's no like dramatic payoff for me. Again, I do not want to, this is, I'm one half of this duo and I refuse to talk about Midsommar.
No, I know, I know. I just wanted to, further espouse my point.
No, I think that's a good comparison, because I just think that like, yeah, that movie like it feels like it's engaging with these topics for the use of shock horror.
Yeah. And so, like, if anything, this should have had the more extreme response, like, the, yeah, extreme response by, like, the parents, because it was so central to the plot, but it didn't. And I think that's something that that Sofia Coppola did well, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it also doesn't feel like 13 Reasons Why.
Oh, gosh,
in the sense that it's, like, overly romantic. Like, even though this is a very, like, seemingly romantic movie, at least in terms of, like, its color palette and, like, approach. When I say romantic, I mean, like, capital R.
No, I know what you mean, yeah.
Not, like...
Certainly not romantic, being left in a field.
But, yeah, I just think that, like, it still is, like, it's not like you go out and, like, they don't feel like... I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just because we grew up with 13 Reasons Why and we see it as this, like, social pariah for inciting people into doing those things. But I'm sure people probably felt the same way about Virgin Suicides when it came out. So I don't know if I can speak to that point of, like, not romanticizing, like, mental illness. It does feel more detached, but...
Yeah, well, and it's also, like, you see the... I think that it points more towards, like, you do see the parents as villains.
Yes.
This, like, they, it's hard because it also kind of, it perpetuates this, the idea that mental illness can be traced to one, like, one source, or, like, it's, like, simple.
That.
It's, like a simple fix. Oh, if the parents hadn't been as controlling, they wouldn't have killed themselves, but...
No, I mean, yeah, the movie, I think, oversimplifies
I think so.
But I think that, like, they're trying to compensate for that, like, the simplicity that comes from just, like, writing a screenplay and having, like, needing an antagonist by, like, keeping that ambiguous tone that, like, at least, like, it's not exactly, like, a one-for-one. They kind of complicate it a little bit. I don't know. What was that? Well, how about we go to some music for a little bit then, while we collect our thoughts and come up with a lovely PSA for you all.
All right. It's time for our PSA. This is about youth reckless driving prevention. In response to the mother's worry about the boys taking the daughters to the dance. Okay. Did you know that car crashes are the number one cause of teen deaths? And that half of all teens that die, die in a car crash, but you can do something about it. Next time you're in a car with a friend who is driving recklessly, speak up. Say something, anything, because there is no spokesperson to prevent reckless driving. There is only you. Speak up. This has been a public service message from the Ad Council.
I know. I've made up my mind. Don't need to think it over. If I'm wrong, I am right. Don't need to look no further. This ain't lust, I know. This is love. But if I tell the world, I'll never say enough, 'cause it was not said to you, and that's exactly what I need to do. If I end up with you, should I give up or should I just keep chasing pavements, even if it leads nowhere? Or would it be a waste, even if I knew my fate? Should I leave it there? Should myself out and fly around in circles, waiting as my heart drops and my back begins to tingle. Finally, could this be it? Oh, should I give up or should I just keep chasing pavements, even if it leads nowhere? Or would it be keep chasing pavements, even if it leads nowhere? Or would it be a waste, even if I knew my place? Should I leave it there? Should I give up? Or should I just keep on chasing pavements? Should I just keep on chasing payments? Oh, should I give up or should I just keep chasing payments, even if it leads nowhere? Or would it be a waste, even if I knew my fate? Should I leave it there? Should I give up or should I just keep chasing payments, bending at the heart of me. We don't know the weight of all the words we say now. In a few more years, with open ears, we just still say that. Alone, they who walk alone.
I just wanted to say a few words about, I was thinking about the symbols of, and like the motifs in this film, and there's like certain objects and qualities that have, that hold great symbolism for the movie as a whole. And for example, well, we were talking about the haziness of the movie, and I think that even like the color of their room, their like pink room, really adds to that kind of.
Yeah, I mean, production design in general is like tight.
Yeah,
it's like the pale, like a very specific color palette.
The like pastel almost, yeah, but like, and like the femininity that's like, I think beginning to, it's about puberty and beginning to,
I mean,
take root.
I do think that like within that, we can talk about maybe some of the problems that exist within the film. Mainly that, like, I feel like for me, this, like, super soft femininity and, like, whiteness, it feels a little like this is a very white movie.
Yeah.
It's a very, like, quote-unquote
suburban
white feminist movie.
Yeah.
Like, it's definitely not acknowledging, like, any of the privileges that these women have. Like,
yeah,
The
privilege to like come, well, to at least like try to come in to themselves.
Yeah, but I also think that like, I don't know, it's like maybe it's critical of whiteness in some ways. I just think maybe it could have pushed further with that, if it was going to take this like to me, like they seem like the Bates family or like one of those like modern day like Fundy families.
Yeah.
And those families are very like wrapped up in a dialogue of, you know, being problematic.
Yeah, and if you think about like, for example, yeah, like,
and I don't think the movie's trying to engage with any of the like the views that the father clearly possesses. Like,
yeah, well, this is like they're seen as like this big, this tragedy that like the town is still mulling over after all these years, and it's like there's the flashbacks of Tripp being like, oh, I loved her so much, and it's like they're still talking about it. Versus if I'm thinking about, you know, like an African-American family, like if all the kids just died, it's like, oh, that's just another day.
No,
like,
and like part of the tragedy
move
is
on.
In like the fact that they were like middle class
mm-hmm.
white women,
and they're valued more.
That are attractive, quote unquote, whatever yeah. that means. Like, there's definitely, like, that sort of, like, I don't know, like, how, like, whether or not people get dubbed as, like, an angel posthumously, like, based on their, like, characteristics, versus, yeah. like...
And it's like, oh, they had so much potential versus, like, if it was a person of color, it'd be, like, kind of, oh, that's just, like, you know, the everyday, like, people just don't think yeah. about it.
Again, like, this, like, tragedy definitely yeah. seems like it's surrounding this, like, definite, like, aesthetic of whiteness that, like, I think that, like, the yeah. aesthetic that we were talking about, this aesthetic of femininity and, like, it's very much, like, white femininity. And mm-hmm. I think that that needs to be acknowledged.
Yeah. Yeah, because other, yeah, races, like, they don't have, it's not afforded to them.
Yeah, this sort of, like, softness, like, yeah. again, like, it feels like there's complications with that. Just also just because I think that, like, in general, Sofia Coppola, like, tends to have, like, tunnel vision.
Yeah. One, I think, I was also going to talk about, like, the symbolism of, well, first of all, it was the fence scene was just hilarious. Like, then after Cecilia, you know, dies on the fence, basically, of the house, their solution is to just rip up the fence. And it's not even, it's just, like, points to they're not trying to address the sickness of, like, the house and what really drove her to do that. It was just like, oh, okay, this was the weapon that, so we're gonna get rid of the weapon rather than, and they reference it later on. It's like, because I think the mom sees one of the daughters standing by a window and she was like, don't worry, you know, the fence is gone, but it's like, the sickness still remains. And the symbol also of the tree, the Cecilia's tree, that the people wanted to, the men who came wanted to cut down, and they stood and held hands around the tree, even though that the tree was sick. And the man said, like, this tree is going to make all the others sick if we leave it up. And it symbolizes, you know, the sickness that took root in that family, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, like, also, like,
and the parents trying to protect it by just standing around it, but it failed. The parents tried to keep them shut in, and it obviously that failed to rectify the yeah. issue.
I mean, it also, like, seems to me, like, it's, like, trying to prevent the inevitable, like,
yeah.
in the sense yeah. that, like, not so much, like, it's inevitable that these women will lose their innocence. And there's so much, like, trying to protect them from losing that innocence that ultimately, like, is what, like, kills them. It's the idea of having to build all of these boundaries of like, bubble wrapping them. I don't know. There's lots on the plate.
Yeah.
Kirsten Dunst is great.
Yep. Yeah. I just wanted to say those things because it was something that I was thinking about. I don't know. I love symbolism, so I did really appreciate those little pieces of it. But I think we explained well, like, our criticisms of it, and yeah, it's by no means a perfect movie. But it does have some good things going for it. Yeah. I think, as we have established. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess some kudos is in order for Sofia Coppola, but...
Some,
yeah. We can have a nuanced opinion of her.
Yes.
As we totally. Know from college, you know, you gotta have a sophisticated
Hopefully
argument.
Hopefully one day I'll gain a nuanced opinion of Robert Eggers, but right now it's just... Straight gold. Okay, well, I think that's about it. We'll go out with a couple more tunes. But this has been Unboxed, and you're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford Tufts, Freeform Radio. It's been Emma and Isabel.
Thanks for tuning in, as always.
And we'll see you in a couple of weeks with another movie.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully, yeah, we'll watch some over break.
I'm sick.